Romania is a small country, probably about the size of Indiana and Ohio combined. It's the furthest east of all of the European countries other than Russia itself. In fact, it's bordered not only on the east but on the north by the Soviet Union, also touching Yugoslavia, Bulgaria, and Hungary. Most of Romania is covered by mountains, known better to us as Transylvania. You think of Transylvania, maybe the first image comes to mind is Count Dracula, just like when overseas you say Chicago, they think of Capone. Actually, Dracula was very famous there as a patriot who kept the Turkish hordes from conquering and going through the land. Going into Romania is like going a little bit into a time machine, and even more than going back in time in America, it's going back in time in a country like Poland, because you still are recent enough to see automobiles side by side with ox carts. You're probably going back from, if you're in Poland today, 40 years earlier, as it was in that country at that time. It's a country of great poverty. It's been greatly torn down by the experiences, particularly under the communist regime, economically very depressed, country full of pollution, and a country that has been caught in the wave this past year of the revolutions that swept most of Eastern Europe. In fact, the revolution, the Christmas Revolution of 1989, took place right at this spot. That's where it began, at the Revolutionary Square in Cluj, the city where most of the brethren are located. Under the previous regime, that of Ceausescu, there was great oppressions of the people, great lack of freedom, and isolationism of the country that was almost impossible to view. As is so often the case, the pendulum of history has come to their country, and now it is a country not only of liberty, but bordering on a country of anarchy as well. Country of great handicrafts, as you can see. Artistry, this is tapestry, and the home is one of the brethren. They make this tapestry for sale, as do many others, to supplement a very meager income that they get from other sources. But the purpose of our report today is not to talk about the country of Romania, except to use it as a backdrop to discuss the brethren. We're going to sort of break our report into sections. First, we're going to give you a brief overview of the journey we had with 12 others, mostly from the United States, except for Christina's uncle and aunt from Argentina. And then we're going to meet specifically and introduce you to some of your Romanian brethren individually. Then we'd like to look at the history of the Truth Movement, how it developed in Romania, and then the needs of the Romanian brethren. And then we'll quickly visit Poland and the International Convention. So that's the scope of our journey together this afternoon. When we first arrived in Romania, we got there by 6 o'clock on a Friday evening. Very easy to find the home of Sister Precoop. She's the one who wrote the letter that first informed us that there were brethren. She lives just as you enter town, the second house. It's her house. So it's very easy to drive in. You're right at her place. The brethren are there in mass to meet us. And this is very typical of how they meet. One apartment we stayed in had three rooms. Each room was about 9 or 10 feet square, and that's where the Cluj Ecclesia meets, and that Ecclesia has 51 members. They have to be jammed like this in the rooms for their meetings, not quite the comfortable spacing that we are able to enjoy here. Saturday after arrival, just to sort of introduce us, they had arranged for a picnic with the brethren of our group and the brethren of the Cluj Ecclesia and some other brethren who had journeyed in to meet us. After some rigorous journey, we found a spot across a creek. The brethren were very kind, took off their shoes and guided the older ones like Brother Budu, who you'll meet later, ones like myself, across the stepping stones to get to the other side. And there we had our Brother Dan Larson pulling us up a 7-foot embankment to get to the top of the hill. And we had a good several hour of fellowship, study together in time at a picnic. the picnic was really divided first into sort of free time, fellowship time, and then a meal. And then we had our first meeting in Romania, which was about a two-hour question meeting. And as at all the places, the questions were largely on prophecy, all showed a great depth of understanding of the Scriptures, and were not at all unlike the questions you might hear in any ecclesia or convention in this country. They were on the current events and how these events tie into Scripture prophecy. We noticed that many of the groups around the picnic were having little Bible studies. There were many question meetings that were going on privately before the meeting, and this also gave us a very good impression of our Romanian brethren in general. Alan here with Sister Precoop. This is the first vision you'll have of the sister who wrote the letter. She's sitting with the glasses next to Alan, and her English is very good, very adequate. Thanks to her, we were able to communicate quite well throughout the country. Very consecrated sister. We'll introduce you to her in more detail later. Again, the fellowship groups, as we learn here, how the truth got to their country, their history of the early days of the truth movement under the occupation forces of German army, the Nazi army, their experiences under early days of communism, under Ceausescu, and their hopes and dreams for their experiences in the future. As every place, the brethren love to sing. Not having had hymn books with notes for many years, they have as many tunes as there are brethren for the same song. So you have a little bit of anarchy that reigns when you sing, but it's a joyful noise that is sung unto the Lord. The food is cooked, and again, because of their conditions, it's quite different than here. The brother in blue, Brother Bria, what you see him getting to cook is fat. Cooked fat is one of the staples that to live on. It's quite a different lifestyle than we are used to in our country as far as the food. And recreation with the young people. But after this, it led, as we say, to the question meeting, which was extremely profitable in opening up our acquaintance with the brethren. The next day on Sunday, we were told that while the brethren usually meet in the home, that they had notified the other brethren throughout Romania of our coming, and therefore they expected the 300 or 400 brethren, so they had rented a theater with 500 seats. When we arrived at the theater, it was so overpacked that there was no way that I, as a speaker, could even get near the theater. You couldn't even work your way through the crowds. Fortunately, one of the brethren had connections with the government, and he was able, on his last minute, to rent another theater that had 1,000 seats, and we trekked about a mile and a half across the city streets to get to this other theater, and the time we got to the other theater, we saw a crowd of 920. 720 that were brethren, 200 that they estimated were public, many of these being fellow workers, neighbors, friends, family of the brethren, but probably about 40 or 50 were ones who saw the parade trooping across town and joined the parade. Everybody loves a parade. And so they came to join the crowd to hear what had to be said. Well, the meeting lasted 4 hours. There were three discourses. Brother Springer, Alan Springer, spoke in English, translated by Sister Betty. Then Brother Lupsor, as was usual, would speak in Romanian in the middle, and I would finish up. Because of the translation, the talks generally went well over an hour, and so it was a four-hour meeting without intermission. They don't want to waste the time with intermissions, so they keep everybody going. And I was amazed, being the last speaker, being in a rather warm auditorium, to find very few closed eyes. The sisters, you know, don't wear little rugs in their hair. They have head coverings that are total babushkas. They cover the whole of the head. We noticed as we were at the meeting that they were somewhat modern. There was at least one, we assume, one of the brethren there who was videotaping the entire thing. And so we decided it would be nice to have a videotape to bring back and show the brethren in America these experiences. So afterwards, we asked the brethren who the brother was videotaping. And their response was, "We thought he was one of you." Evidently, it was one of the government. It was either there for their purpose of recording what was going on, or otherwise from one of the local media stations that may have been there. I guess it happened to be an event in town that day. After the meeting, we had an experience that showed us a little bit about Romanian life. Accidentally, the keys got locked in the car. And we tried various methods of breaking in. In fact, the brethren there tried breaking in. They tried taking the hinges off the back door. They tried everything they could to get into the car. But finally, a hike was made to the nearest hotel to try to get help. And they had professional breakers in. And they sent two of the professional breakers in. And within 10 minutes, they had the keys out of the car. And we were able to continue on our way. The next day, we went 90 miles further north to the town of Baia Mare. Baia Mare was a meeting was about 150. And this meeting was more typical of the general meetings that you find in Romania. They are not held in theaters. They're held beside haystacks, in the fields, in the arbors of the farms. And that's where these brethren were sitting, out by the haystack. And they were there well in advance of our arrival. The meeting here was about 4.5 hours. The larger part of the meeting was a question meeting. And as in almost every episode, and we should go back to Cluj to demonstrate this, after the four-hour meeting at that theater that you saw, we went to the home of Brother Incia, who you'll meet later, and then they wanted another question meeting that went on 3 hours, and they closed it, not because they were tired, I'm sure they were, I know I was, but they closed it because it was too dark to read anymore, and you couldn't even look at your scriptures, because it was outdoors under the arbor. That happened almost every place. The meetings were called because of darkness. One of the experiences in Baia Mare, most of the brethren in Romania live in the northwestern 1/6 of the country, in quite a small area. There are about 2,000 brethren, and the large majority live in this section. You get to the big cities, Bucharest, the capital, biggest city in the country, there are two brethren. Brasov, the city of Count Dracula, that is the second largest city in the country, a class of 8 brethren. But you get to the north, city of Lapa, city of 1,000, a class of 100. And so it gets quite a bit larger when you get to this area of the country. The customs are much more conservative than we're used to. If you're praying, prayers are done, hands held in this manner. Anything else is giving into the flesh. Meetings generally, not the meetings for the brethren coming from overseas, but their general meetings on Sunday open with an hour's prayer meeting. A half-hour discussion of prayer or discourse on prayer and a half-hour of prayers. In the translation, we notice that it was the custom, and Sister Betty says, it is the custom, you do this, that if I would refer to a scripture in my talk, usually I would have a translator just read the scripture rather than translate it because it just takes extra time. There, that could not be done. Sisters do not read scriptures. The elder has to read the scripture. So the brother here, the elder, is reading the scriptures that are to be used in the talk. She can do all the translating other than that, but the Lord's word, they wanted that particular way. The attention, as you can see in these faces, and this has taken probably about 2.5 hours into the meeting, remain very much attentive, very much on the subject, and the questions afterwards certainly indicated that the attention span was very high. You notice that the backrests are not too comfortable. That's because they're non-existent. You're sitting merely on planks covering across 2 crates, one on each side. Our next meeting was in Sighet, at the very north part. In between, you cross a mountain range, and we cut the top of the mountain range. We just pulled over to the side of the road for seemingly no reason, and there was a prairie there, and we had a picnic. We had our lunch up there, and immediately, as soon as the brethren got there, they sat down, gathered around the different ones of the group, and immediately they wanted into a study in scriptures. Questions were there. Questions covered almost the entire period that we were there, except for the eating period, and some just a little bit of wandering to see the beauty area. Well, we expected to be a half-hour lunch stop because of the questions turning into an hour-and-a-half stop. And so as a result of the length of it, we arrived in Sighet. I always get that wrong. My wife corrected me this morning. Into Sighet about an hour to hour-and-a-half late. The brethren had already arrived. They were already sitting on their benches. There are 170 in this case. They've been waiting 2 hours for us. They insisted we eat before the meeting. During that hour of our eating, they sang hymns to give us background music. And then the meeting went on 5 to 5.5 hours. No intermissions. That was rather exhausting, I think, for everybody, including our translator. But it was a blessing because the questions were very good. At the last hour, Sister Prekup was finally tiring in translation. So she said, I think we better do something different for the last hour. She said, you ask the questions. I'm going to sit down. You ask them to Christina. And Christina will translate into Spanish, and her uncle will translate into Romanian. And the answers will go back to that same torturous three-way path. It worked beautifully. In fact, the first question we asked was along the line of this morning's study. It was about tentative justification. And we had a good discussion on that. And then a question about the tabernacle, the high priest, whether he's wearing the robes of glory and beauty or the robe of sacrifice at the present time. And again, we appreciated the attention. We appreciated the participation and the intercommunication in the study session. Again, this meeting, like the others, was outdoors. Hat trees were provided, literally hat trees. And you had the privilege of meeting the Mountain Brethren, as you can see by the costume. There are some very distinct local costumes in this particular area. Sziget is directly on the Russian border. The city itself is maybe an eighth of a mile from Russia. You are just across the river. In fact, you can see the Russian side at one point very clearly. The meeting was about 1 kilometer from the Soviet Union. This area is where the largest number of the brethren were. Sziget itself has a class of about 45. Yapa, the adjoining community, 6 kilometers, 4 miles away, is a class of 100. Just the other direction, about 4 miles, is a class of 60. So in our area, that would be all one class. There, because of transportation difficulties, it isn't. It was all very much the same kind of fellowship. Introduce you now to some of the individual brethren. This sister, we noted for her alertness. We thought that her age showed very clearly with her bent back, with all of her conditions, but she was running around the mountain very well, and we found out that her age is only 71. Many of the brethren there look much older than they are because of the physical conditions tend to make them that way. Sister Penina is an example of many that are to us a marvel. When Brother Beloga went to Romania in May, he only found Sister Prekup speaking English. He found a few others who had a smattering, but very little English. We went 2 months later, and we found 15, 18, who could communicate simple words, simple thoughts in English. They knew we were coming. They prepared for our coming by studying our language. We were very impressed. Penina was one of those who had a little education, had some speaking of it before, and was a good example of those who could communicate pretty well with us. We just got a letter from one yesterday whose English was somewhat limited, but certainly amazingly well for 2 months. Her letter was in English, and we appreciated the correspondence from her. The Zoykosh family in the city of Baia-Mare. So often in Romania, the most popular member of our party was Sister Gloria Zemler. And Gloria's popularity was because you are the sister of Suzanne Yamber? Suzanne Yamber is the patron saint of Romania. She corresponds with, I don't know how many brethren in that country, and her correspondence is very meaningful to them. The Zoykosh family is one who treasures their correspondence with Sister Suzanne. As we were getting to Baia-Mare, we developed car trouble. The tailpipe became disconnected up near the front, and instead of sounding like a car, we sounded like a squad of airplanes attacking the city. When we arrived, Brother Zoykosh said, I'm a mechanic. I'll be glad to fix it. The next morning, he welded it and got it back together in good shape. And so I asked him, said, I'm sure there were parts and materials that you had to get. I'd like to I pay for them. He said, no, I don't want anything, just the one who helped me. So I assume he must have had a laborer to help him. So I said, well, how much does he want? Well, you must ask him. Well, fine, where can I find him? Up there. His helper was the Lord. The Lord was the one, and we know what the Lord wants for his help. Their daughter, the third from your right, Priscilla, is one who does speak quite good English. Brother John, I think Dan could tell the story of him better than anybody else could tell it, but the Larsons were at the border with Russia, taking a picture of the Soviet Union, and the army came up. And they said, we'd like your camera, please. And they confiscated the camera, and Brother John was with them at the time, and he spent about 2 hours, wasn't it, Dan, arguing with the army to get it back. In the meantime, his father had just one expression, oi, 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 oi. What was going to happen to his son in his contact with the army? John is the engineer, rather important position in Romania. They thought that would help secure his safety. All worked out well. The camera came back, minus film, but at least it was restored, and much more important, John came back and was with us much of the journey. Brother Stan. Brother Stan is the elder. I use the term elder advisedly, and you'll find this later when I talk about the history of the country. Brother John is the elder at Sigat. Always get that wrong. At the age of 12, his mother died, left him with siblings. He spent his life at that age taking the responsibility to raise the family, has raised his family, now married, has his own family, and is an elder in that class there. A brother we enjoyed very much. Brother Bump is on your right. He is from the city of Bayaspria. Some of you may have heard of the Romanian brethren who are in New York City, Brother and Sister Burja. This is at the home of the Burjas, or really Brother Boom's home across the street from them. The girl in the middle is the sister of Sister Burja and her mother on the left. Brother Boom, now on your left, was one of those who was imprisoned under the previous regime. One of the activities they had in their work camp was milking the venom of poisonous snakes. It was considered far too dangerous to let civilians do it. So this was one of the jobs the prisoners were put to. And it was quite a dangerous job. They used the venom for various medications, etc. This is the sister you want to know most for two reasons. One, you know her already through her correspondence, Sister Elzbieta Precoop, the one who wrote the letter that you heard that stimulated your interest and mine in our brethren over there. Sister Betty is 49 years old, I believe. Is that right, Dan? 50 years old. She was born and raised in the truth, but did not take to it personally for many years. Became very educated, fluent in the Russian language and the English language, learned some Hungarian, a little German, as a professional nurse, and only 8 years ago made her consecration to the Lord. She has not walked the narrow way since then. She has run. She has been amazing to us with her, the depth of her consecration, her involvement, not just in translation work. She's responsible for much of the present translation going on, but also for organizing much of the activity and working with the brethren along this same line. If the Lord wills, she'll be here for our May convention, and you'll get a chance to meet her personally, to fellowship with her. Hopefully she'll be here for about 4 months, coming in the middle of May if it all works out well. She's considering very strongly the possibility of just quitting her job and going full-time into serving the Lord and the brethren in her country. Brother Jean, I always have to read this name carefully, Niagomir. That's the name I can't remember. It's hard for me to get. Brother John was our protector. As we said, Romania is coming from an extremely dominated society into a society with no rules. As a result, it's on the brink of anarchy. Every man claims that which he wants. Brother John, knowing this, insisted that each night, either he or sometimes arranged a substitute, slept in our vans to be sure that they would not be vandalized or stolen during the night. He is very constant in the service of the brethren. It makes me think of that scripture in Romans, addicted to the service of the brethren. He was his wife. Changing a light bulb at Sister Villarica's because you couldn't see anything in the hallway. Just always on hand to be available and constantly helpful to the brethren. Brother Boudou. Brother Boudou is 85 years old. He is one who knew French very well. He doesn't know it as well now because he had been in France many years ago. He is the one who translated volumes 1, 2, 3, and most of volume 4 into the Romanian language and therefore is responsible for the truth literature that they have. Brother Boudou is extremely involved in the study of the truth. The first question we were asked at the question meeting at Cluj was to explain the parable of the dragnet and when the dragnet was drawn in. And we said 1878. And he stood up and said, "Don't you really mean 1881, brother?" And for the next 20 minutes, he gave a complete outline of the chronology and of the end times, and far more accurate than I was. Appreciated his comments very much. We also appreciated Brother Boudou for his spirit. Romanian brethren have not been able to do much in public witness. Now they are beginning to feel as to what opportunities might be available to them. We were discussing this on the hillside, and the brethren said, "Well, there's a lot of things we'd like to do, but our government controls the media. They control the press, they control the radio, they control the television, and therefore there's just no way that we can use these. We have to do other means." And Brother Boudou almost sprang to his feet as much as he could in his condition. And he said, "Brethren, that's not true. We haven't tried. Let's say we can't after we've tried. Let's apply for television. Let's apply for radio." And all I could think of, and those of you who knew him could agree, thank you, Brother Peter Kalaman. He was such a reminder of the zeal that Brother Peter had, and Brother Boudou was one who shared that same vision. Brother Miklos. Brother Miklos is not Romanian. Brother Miklos is a Hungarian brother. 6 ecclesias in the country of Romania today study the truth in the Romania in Hungarian language. Brother Miklos is a leader in one of those ecclesias. He also, though, is very close to Romanian brethren and very helpful to them. We had planned to take 5 brethren with us from Romania to the International Convention, and the most convenient way was to go through Austria. But they didn't have Austrian visas. It would take us another 7 hours to reroute and go to Czechoslovakia because the road conditions would be so much poorer. Brother Miklos says, "No problem. I'll get the visas." I don't know how many hours he spent. He drove all the way to Budapest, spent hours at the embassy, and drove all the way back, and they had the visas the next day. Very much involved with the service of the brethren. Sister Villarica Roska. Villarica is one, as you look at her, you may be a good example of not guessing her age. She's 41. She's a computer programmer, very well educated. It's her apartment that has the 3 rooms we talked about where the meetings are held. We stay in her apartment. One of the very, very consecrated saints. At her house, we were asking, "What do you study?" "We're studying the 3rd volume." "Here, I'll show you." And she pulled the 3rd volume off the shelf, and I opened it. And to my amazement, it was all handwritten. And I commented on that. And she said, "Well, all of her books are. If you want the volumes, you copy them. You copy them word for word. And after you copy 3,000 pages, you get a pretty good idea of what the cost and the value of the truth really is." Villarica has probably the best knowledge of all the brethren in the country. She certainly knew the streets and cities far away. She was... does not have a car. No, she does have a car. Take it back. But she was our guide for most of the trip. And although we could not speak the same language, except my wife, who managed to communicate in any language, but we somehow managed to communicate quite well and had very good fellowship and a very high opinion of Sister Villarica. And she is one that we hope will be very active in the future of the work there, as possibly they can move into the computer age and use that in the promulgation of the truth in their country. Brother Aurel, his wife, Sister Florica, and Brother Benjamin, the brother of Sister Florica. An example of many of the younger couples. They have two children, the Aurel and Florica. And our impression with them, again, was the constant devotion and the depth of the questions, and Benjamin just as much so. Always probing, in the car as well as at the meetings, constantly asking questions, and Aurel particularly volunteering thoughts additionally to the thoughts that were given, and thoughts that expanded our mind very much, extremely depthful in their knowledge of present truth. Brother Ligosh Mark, his daughter, Christina, what's the daughter's name? No, Helena's the other daughter. Then with their daughter and the granddaughter, Diana. He also is one of those who, when he deacons, deeks well. He was constantly available for the service of us around the area. A rather attractive building, pink, nicely painted, well kept up. One of the harshest prisons in the country of Romania. The prison at Gheta. A prison where many of our brethren spend much time. I want you to meet Brother Ioan Galiș. Brother Galiș is from a community south of Cluj. The meetings were in his house in 1958, or it could be 68. I'm not sure of my year. 58. Okay, that's what I thought. I thought that 8 was the last year. 1958, he was having a meeting in his house, and he got a warning. The police are coming. The brethren hid the books that they had in the chimney. There were some children playing outside. They threw the books to the children and said, please get these hid for us. Children took them to their parents, and they got hid around the neighborhood. A couple of books were put under the kitchen table where they were studying, and the police came in and accused them of having a meeting. They searched. They did not find the books. The policeman dropped his tablet, I believe it was, off the table. He bent down to pick it up, and they knew that he couldn't help but see the books that hid under the table. He didn't see those, but he still arrested them. 6 were sentenced to prison. Brother Galiș was sentenced to 8 years. Brother Negrio, you see shortly after this, to 6 years. They spent that time in that prison we talked about. Their experiences in prison were not pleasant. One sister who was also in prison, I'm not sure it was the same incident, may have been another similar incident, was beaten every day for 30 days. Never did recover her health, died this year. These brethren had very hard experiences in that prison, much persecution. There are many witnesses, Jehovah's Witnesses, in the same prison. They witnessed to them. One gave him the truth. Another one had a wife, a witness had a wife who baked bread for him and was permitted to bring this bread to prison. And it was the bread of life, because inside the bread were pages of the Bible that she baked right into the bread. She would share these with Brother Galiș, and he memorized the entire New Testament while in prison. He spent 4.5 years when he was released. After Ceausescu's death, the brethren were informed that any of those who had been held in prison, all charges against them were erased from the books. They were all innocent, and so there's no charges held against them. Brother Cornel Negria was at that meeting. He was sentenced to 6.5 years. He learned something in prison. He said, I learned that you can handle any amount of stress if you concentrate on the Apostle Paul. And when in prison, sing. And says, when stress got too much, I would just lean back and I'd sing a hymn. On our way to the International Convention, we were traveling through Austria. This is the first time these brethren had been in the western part of Europe. The Autobahns were a frightening experience to them. They weren't used to driving 110 miles an hour. And as we were driving along at that speed, Brother Negri would often ask Christine, I think it was, to look at the speedometer and say, how fast is he going? 110. And he'd lean back and sing. He found a way to handle the stress of his condition. Brother Cornell and Sister Marie Bria. Sister Marie is another one of the communication links. She speaks fluent French, in fact, is a teacher of French. Brother Cornell's father was, to trace the history of the movement, the fourth major leader in the movement, chronologically, to the present time. And Brother Berea is now taking on much of that same responsibilities of being a coordinator of the activities of the brethren. They have two children, very, very spiritually minded, and a great blessing to know, and rather easy to communicate with when you've got somebody who can speak a little French. You don't need to speak Romanian. My hero, Brother Vasily Insia. There are so many things of Brother Insia that has impressed me. I'll just relate two of Brother Insia's incidents that I think may demonstrate the kind of person he is. When the Hitler armies came in 1939, Brother Insia was a young man. All of the books were confiscated and burned. Some of the brethren, he was one, managed to safely hide their books. But he did more than hide his book. He immediately went and looked for an underground printer. He was willing to take the risk, printed the volumes again, and within 2 months, the brethren had the volumes back in their hands. At the same time, he wrote a book for public witness, went to the same printer, had it printed, and right under the German soldiers' noses, they kept witnessing and spreading the truth by booklets. Another occasion, it was at a funeral. Brother Bria's father was preaching the funeral. The priests were hassling them, making a very strong ruckus. And Brother Insia just strode over to the priest and said, "You better keep your mouth closed or I'll call the police." He knew if he called the police, he'd be the one getting arrested. But he said it so authoritatively, the priest just backed off, and they had their service. He was willing to stand for his beliefs, stand for his faith. I call him my hero because, as you know, I'm having my share of leg problems right now. And the way up that hillside, when Dan tried to pull this heavy corpse up, it didn't quite work, and I fell down the hillside. And sitting it down on the ground didn't work too well. And I got up, my legs hurt, and Brother Insia was right there to make sure that my legs would be working condition. And every day that he was around, I had a professional massage because he used to do that during the war. Backing up, that's his sister-in-law, another one of their sisters that's there. Sister Claudia Tosha, on the left, is probably the second best knowledge of English of any of the brethren we met. Quite shy, she was very hesitant to admit this, but after a lot of fellowship, she has agreed to try translating at least material for children and try to get some of the material ready for them. We wanted to introduce you to her because we hope, we don't know for sure, but we hope that you will soon meet her sister. Sister also speaks English, and she's now living in Chicago. She's just moved here from Romania. They have our address. We haven't yet had the contact from them. But hopefully we'll have a Romanian member to our class. She, her sister, and her husband are both consecrated. Sister Anuta. You don't see her, only see the back. That's the best I can do. I'm sorry about that. This sister traveled many miles, arriving at 5 o'clock in the morning, Dan? At 5 o'clock in the morning for that Sunday meeting. Her husband was one of those who was imprisoned. And he didn't have the chance to learn the Bible in prison, so he learned the entire third volume, front to back, spending his time concentrating and memorizing. It's these works that have kept these brethren together lo these many years. Next tray. Let's go into the history of the movement in Romania. In 1912, Brother Russell sent a Brother Soba to Hungary to spread the truth in Hungary. That part of Hungary is now Romania due to the shifting sands of wars. It's that message that was brought by Brother Soba that has resulted in the truth movement being what it is and growing today. Brother Soba was assisted in those early days by Brother Budu, who you met. Brother Budu did the translation. After his death, their Brother Filipu became the more prominent of the leaders. Brother Filipu translated Volume 5 and Volume 6 from the German into the Romanian. And he began a monthly magazine publication, the first article of which was a translation of an article from the American magazine, The Herald. The second article was always a translation of a continuing section of Volume 5 or Volume 6. And then there were three or four articles written by the local brethren in their country. This magazine continued from 1933 until the German forces entered in 1939. And then the magazine had to be stopped, and they've not been able to do any printing of any type since that time. This is a hand-drawn chronology chart listing about every known chronological feature of the scriptures. A chart I've never seen in this country as such. A chart I didn't have the time to study, nor probably could I do a good job because of my lack of knowledge of all the words that would be on there. But you can get a general idea of the detail of it. There is a copy of this chart in this country. The Borgias have a copy in New York. And hopefully we're going to be able to make some kind of, you get a clearer picture. This was the best we could get with the equipment we had at hand. Under the communist regime, the brethren were not permitted to have ecclesias. It was strictly forbidden. And as a result, they had to drop the election of elders. The consequence of electing elders was anyone who's elected elder was immediately subject to imprisonment for being the leader. So they would have rotating chairman. Now that the Ceausescu regime has ended, most of the classes have as one of their studies the Organization of the Ecclesia in Volume 6, and for preparation for elections, class elections, this month and next month throughout Romania, going back to the system that they and you and I are much more used to. During the Ceausescu period particularly, almost all meetings had to be held like this, outdoor. This is not an example of their meeting. It's obvious I'm standing there. But it's the type of place where they would meet. They'd meet in clearings in the forest. They'd have conventions, up to 500 brethren meeting in the forest. They would have regular meetings every week. In some cities, they would have them in homes. In some cities, every week, every member had to pay a fine for being at the meeting. It was a violation of the law. They weren't imprisoning him at the time. They were fining them. They'd go back next week, pay their admission fee or their fine, depending on how you want to call it. The policemen weren't happy about the job either. One policeman told the sister, "Can't you please draw your drapes? If I don't see it, I don't know what's going on. I can't arrest you." Just use a little more discretion. The people that were caught in enforcing were not the ones that made the laws. The meetings that were held in the forest like this had to end early, usually by 3 o'clock, not because of fear of detection, but because of wolf packs roaming the hills. And as these wolves would come through, then they'd be very dangerous to the ones living there. We were told about this as we were getting ready for a bed one night at this home up in the mountains outside of Siget. And as we were sleeping during the night, we would wake up and we'd hear these wolves howling in the background. Well, during the night, I needed to use the bathroom. Now, the facilities there are not quite like we have in our country. You go out to the barnyard, and then you go to the bathroom that's out there next to the pigsty. So I went out and listening to the howling, the wolves out there. And as I was coming back, I saw this white animal slink by. I said, "Ooh, what do I do now?" Then I heard it bark. It was no wolf. The needs of the brethren. The first and greatest need is to have the volumes in printed form readily available. You see the happiness in this couple's faces. They've just received their copy of what's in their hand, the first volume, in the Romanian language. Already work is underway to print all six volumes in Romanian. Those that haven't been typeset in the past are being typeset. Sisters who know computers, let me know later. There is a need for more inputters of the language. You have to just be very good sight typists to do it. But they're being produced. We took with us 8 suitcases full of Romanian Bibles, Romanian first volumes, Romanian hymn books. And they need to have this done. Currently, we had with us the manuscript, typeset manuscript, of about 3/4 of Volume 5. Brother Mike Nicor, who's heading up the typesetting input, told us, "I want it proofread in 6 days. I want it back and it's over." And that's several 100 pages. So at the picnic, we gave it out. They distributed it to different brethren. Sister Ellen Mark is here taking her part. And they weren't just picnicking. They were working as well. They were reading the translation. As we got ready to go on to the international, they gave us back the completed manuscript, all proofread and checked. Children's needs. There are about 100 children we met in the country, and the brethren there said, we don't have anything for the children. We never have had children's classes. We realize the need for it. The Polish brethren are trying to help them along this line because they're very well organized for youth work. But there is a need for materials, Sunday school materials, things for the children. Here we see the same little girl, one of the Chart of the Ages coloring books of the Chicago class. And it was an immediate hit with her. That is another of the needs they have. The needs for visits, needs for correspondence, not particularly the needs for temporal things. They are content and happy with the circumstances the Lord has given them and feel adequately supplied, except for medicines they can't get, and the French brethren are handling that very well. Upon our trip in Romania comes to an end, we're having our last meal, our last supper, and as we're eating, we hear the brethren gathering around us, singing, God be with you till we meet again. It's hard to eat when they sing that song, and you have met brethren you love so well. It was hard for them. They said goodbye to our Romanian brethren. On the way west, we had 5 of the brethren with us. Their reactions to the west were varied. We stopped for a picnic in Hungary, as you see here. They went from excitement, I can almost see why the kingdom is here, to anger. How come they have so much and we have so little? To fear. How can brethren survive on such affluence? They were as surprised to find you as you were to find them. Can there possibly be brethren still in America with the society you've got? How can it be? These reactions ran through and through. Many were customs. Many were valid comments the brethren had. Brother Negria. The brethren returned by my daughter and Kathy Stein from the convention back to their land. And now the harvest fields in Poland. We went to the convention at Zakopane, up in the mountains. Beautiful setting for the convention. Convention similar to the one that we saw in Romania, outdoors, on benches, but with very well-equipped PA systems, about 400 brethren at the convention at Zakopane. The meals prepared, a little makeshift kitchen, adequate food for all. Fellowship around it. You see where the Jakubowski in the background. The Piacic family that many of the brethren here know. From the convention of Zakopane, we spent, well, this is the Miksas. It's on their farm where the convention is held. We went to Bilgoraj, Poland. First time we've been at this class. My wife's been there before. We were extremely impressed with the brethren at Bilgoraj. The meeting was a very delightful meeting. The discussions were very good and profitable and spiritual. 3 other elders in the front. Brother Arata on your left, he also hopes to be here next year. Our brother Signowski in the middle, he gave a talk at Zakopane that was one of my highlight talks of this year. And Brother Swabinski on your right, and he is one is very active with the youth work. One of the few places where they just built a new hall. A beautiful meeting hall that they've been able to construct there in the city of Bilgoraj. The group of us, as we're getting ready to leave Bilgoraj, the sisters who so energetically provided our meals, I'd like to call your attention to the brother on your right, Brother Manfred Lipka. He is one of the victims of the Chernobyl incident. He is very near the end of his course with cancer. It was caused by the fallout from Chernobyl. His wife is in the back in the gray dress, standing behind me, very much rejoicing, though, in spiritual things. He drove with us between Krakow and Bilgoraj, and a very good fellowship with him. They insist on getting your car ready for the journey, washing your windows, and you're on your way. To the home that is a unique home in Poland, symbol of other homes in other countries. A home that is not owned by one or two people, it's owned by the Lord, open to all, but occupied mainly by this couple, Pavel and Teresa Dombek, a real haven for the brethren. a place where the brethren can gather around, doors always open, a place to eat, a place to sing, a place to have sweet music and hymns and fellowship to the Lord, a place to have Bible discussions and studies together, a place for the children to congregate and play. It was a home that we've always appreciated, and perhaps never more than this year. You find it duplicated in Germany at the home of the Stauders and other places, but it's a home that is an example of a consecrated house. The synagogue in the background, the white building, is a very interesting history. It was built in the 1500s. It's the oldest synagogue in Europe. When the Jews were forced out of Spain in 1492, Columbus, on his journey to America, writes in his log that I saw the last boatload of Jews being exported, being driven out, exiled. When they got to Poland, many of them went to Poland. This is one of the synagogues they built. It was in this synagogue that the Polish brethren had a public meeting this year. Public meeting centered around Sila, the young Polish choir, not always young, some of their older brethren. They would sing various of the Psalms of David. And after they sing two or three, in this particular instance it was myself with Darius translating, would give a message of the truth woven into the psalm that they just sung, introducing the next set of psalms. There were at the meeting about 400, 200 public, about 200 brethren. Some Jews, it was their high holy day, the 9th of Ab, and the message was tied into the 9th of Ab. Others Christians. Some appreciating it, others not appreciating it. I had one American gentleman come to me. He saw the poster. He said, "That music was heavenly, but you preachers sure talk too long." Poland, a land of familiar faces. The Suhonics, the Roratas, the Roman homes to be here, Daniel Coletta, the sisters, two sisters of Marta Konopczynski-Zabala and her mother, brother and sister Sop of Krakow, many of you know them. These are the parents of Daniel Kariga, a young brother just newly in our class, his father and his mother and his fiancée. And there is Eva, Daniel's fiancée, with her family. She's also happens to be Daria's cousin. Raphael, her brother, and her parents, the brother and sister Nemchik. The Grudzin family. The rest that Daniel, the Darius leaves back home, often thinks about. And not there, but we got to include it, the Stauders, the one who have a home that is just as open as can be. A very small house they have in Worms, Germany. Our first night in Europe we spent there, there were 16 of us in their house. Our last night in Europe we spent there, there was 40 of us in their house. We called there about three times since. Each time was a minimum of 15 in the house. Every square inch is full of bodies sleeping, serving them. A very open home. The International Convention. 640 brethren there this year. They wanted time to switch the tape here. I'm going to let them switch their tape for just a second. At the International Convention, of course, it's the privilege of meeting brethren from countries we don't often see. Sister Sushila Bhargava from Secunderabad, India. The sister in the flesh, your brother Gilbert, that some of you know about, who's spoken in our class. One of the real functions of the International is to get brethren from different countries to know each other. Brother Kateman, one of the very active brethren from Germany, was delighted to meet Sister Prekup from Romania, establishing a new tie, a new ability to work across country lines in the service of the Lord. Last year, some of you may remember Brother Kopak, who was here to meet Kopak. He died shortly after returning. This is his widow. She was here also. "He being dead yet speaketh," his talk was given at the International, read by his brother. For me, it was the highlight of the convention, as it was in the days of Lot. Another point group of the brethren from Poland was Sister Prekup, establishing another alliance across the country lines.
Two sisters from Denmark, where there are so few brethren, almost totally isolated. Sister Marie Kiar and Sister Edith Hasselgaard. If you ever go to Denmark, Sister Hasselgaard speaks good English. No worries about communication. Argentina, Christina's uncle and aunt. East Germany, first time that they were able to attend in any large numbers, 14 came. East German brethren is only about 60 in number. They're held together by the same vision, Brother Russell, and this brother here is largely responsible. He and his brother, this is Brother Ralph Hagelstein, his brother Hans Hagelstein, have been the ones who have been really holding the brethren in the unity of the faith in East Germany. Every evening, Sister Alpha Katerba would arrange for a meeting with brethren from a different country. So we could ask questions, any question we wanted about the brethren's situation in that country. These are the brethren from East Germany. The sister in the flower dress in front, is 90 years old. Very, very helpful in many of her comments about the history. Brother Walder sitting next to her is an elder in the class at Chemnitz. And I used to be called Karl Markstadt. But all of those names now are being changed. Anything that had a communist turn is being changed back to a different name. Even these streets that were named for dates of the communist revolution are now changed to modern dates, to other events. They want to forget it. When you go into Romania, there is a sign of the values of the different currencies. $1 buys so much of their money. 1 mark buys so much of their money. 1 Russian ruble buys nothing. They don't even want it. You can't even trade it in at the border. The only one they wouldn't accept. Before World War II, there were 2,000 brethren in Germany. Now there's probably 200. Before the war, there were 2,000 brethren in Romania. Now there are 2,000. Before the war, Dariusz, how many were in Poland? Probably 1,500? More than that. Now I think there's more than was before the war, though. It's increased. It's interesting how different countries reacted to the same experiences quite different ways in the growth and the truth. Sister Dollinger, from East Germany, 97 years old, consecrated in 1912, one of the very strong stalwarts in the truth from East Germany. I have to take a few seconds to tell Sister Hensel's story. Sister Hensel, when she was a teenager, gave a set of the vines to her next-door neighbor, who the next year moved all the way to Brazil. And not until many, many years later, 20, 30 years later, did the sister in Brazil read those volumes. Came in the truth, wrote Sister Eva thanking her for the books, a belated thank you note, some 30 years later. Sister Eva began a weekly correspondence course from Germany to Brazil, educating the sister in the truth. The sister began to witness, found another consecrated brother in the truth who had heard the truth through Judge Rutherford back in 1922, 1923, and moved to Brazil, who saw much of the truth but did not see the Lord's presence. Sister Eva began a weekly correspondence with him. 2 years later, he wrote a tract as to why the Lord was present. These weekly letters continued for many years. The brethren in Brazil have kept these letters, cross-indexed them, filed them, and it becomes almost a study source to them. A sister who was faithful in just serving in her little corner, doing what she could. Chris Knapczynski's mother, on the left, Sister Go from France. Other one, most of you know. Brother and Sister Plevniak from Poland. His mother has multiple sclerosis. Only her head can move. Rejoicing thoroughly in her experiences. Always a blessing to see, to talk to. Sister Grugine from Australia, one of two from Australia that attended the convention. The mother of Anna Grugine Wiltshire, that some of you rather know, was in our midst for several months a few years ago. The brethren from the Ukraine. There were 7 brethren from Ukraine, the Soviet Union, at the convention. This is the session with them. Their discussions regarding the new translations of the volumes that the Winnipeg Ecclesia is doing in the Ukrainian language. Brother Pashierski, one of the brethren from the Ukraine, Some of you may know Brother Pasierski from Wrocław, Poland. This is his cousin. They can almost be identical twins. It looks so similar. You know the Jakosz family here. Ella, Grzegorz, brother and sister Jakosz. This is their son, Joseph, was at the convention, Ella's brother. This young lady got a surprise one day at the international convention. She was sitting down to dinner, and suddenly a bouquet of roses arrived from America, from Daniel Kariga to his fiancée. Gail could tell you about it. She was next to her. The children made a tabernacle as their work for the children's class in the international. Tell you about just closing. These are Brother Timo and Sister Sirpa Nordman from Finland. Only 13 brethren in their country. In their country, they don't have the view pretty much of witness activities all in the past, except for these two. They single-handedly are trying to convert the country. They're translating books. They're active all over the land and doing what they can. Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love. This is the closing song for the International Convention.
sing Romanian, you can sing along. This is special for us over there.
Thankful that we have a God who understands all languages. Tom will close in prayer.